Hi, I'm Mike Kuntz. Welcome to No Limits, a show dedicated to new ideas and concepts, a search for truth and unlocking the greatness inside each of us. We have a great show today. If you're interested in improving your health and extending your life, our first guest may hold the answers to many of these questions. Our second guest is a former executive of the Pfizer Corporation. He is an organizational consultant helping corporations enhance communications using techniques of improvisation. It seems that people learn more when they're having fun. And we'll be right back with our first guest. Welcome back to the show. Elena Rosenfeld is a certified acupuncturist, massage therapist, and a lifestyle consultant. As a practitioner, she's helped many of her patients overcome conditions where traditional medicine has fallen short. Welcome to the show, Elena.
Thank you.
Give us a description of acupuncture so our listeners can better understand its benefits.
Acupuncture is healing modality going back to 10,000 years. And I call it energetic medicine. It has energetic pathway called meridians, and each meridian has acupuncture points, like a little antennas come up to the surface. When you put the needle, it connects the energy, start moving the energy and blood throughout the body, connecting inside with outside, up with down, and that's how it works.
Now, if someone comes in to you and has a specific illness or a problem with their health, what do you actually do to manipulate the meridians you're talking about, and how does that affect that muscle?
Meridians run in every part of the body, through the legs and the body and the hand and the arm. So I examine what the pain is, and there is something called distant and the local points where the needle goes, where the pain is, and at the distal points where the pain at the meridian runs to the other part of the body.
A patient first comes to you and they're ailing from some specific illness or problem, and you sit with them for their first consultation. What is it that you're explaining to them so they get a clear understanding? I'm assuming that many of these people have had traditional medicines going to their regular practitioner, a doctor. And what do you explain to them so they become more familiar and also at ease with this new form of healing?
I explain how acupuncture works, that it's an energetic medicine. I always talk about the diet and lifestyle, and I examine the body and see where the problem is.
Elena, let's tell our listeners how you first came to be involved with acupuncture. What made you make it a lifetime career?
It's a very interesting question because I was introduced to acupuncture when I have my own health issues, and I was helped a lot. Literally in a month I felt much better, so I was very interested to pursue my own career because of my experience.
Nutrition. It's an important thing today. We hear about nutrition and health all the time. People are obese, they have diabetes, there's an overuse of sugars, carbohydrates. How do you introduce nutrition as a support to helping them heal in acupuncture? How do they work hand in hand?
Yes, that's a very good question, because every time I have a new patient, I always start with nutrition. I go over their problem, maybe some digestive issues, and go over some foods that are not good for digestion. And that's a key of success with acupuncture treatment, because I'm helping them to be the best and do at home the right thing.
Now, acupuncture, what you're doing is with acupuncture, as I understand it, is you're using specific needles to open up specific meridians that you're trained to do, which allow energy to flow into that part of the body to relieve an illness or a pain or an anxiety for chance. How does changing the diet also affect that? In other words, how does it support your therapy?
For example, if a person has a headache, it's a liver moves the blood to the head. Mm-hmm. And if the liver is congested, toxic, or don't have enough water, the person may have a headache just because of the liver is congested. So that by drinking water and eating better diet, the liver will move the blood more smoothly.
Interesting. Let's talk about a chronic epidemic today, diabetes. Health costs have increased because of this disease. It's now stated that one out of every five people suffer from diabetes. How do you treat a person who comes to you with diabetes?
Diabetes is a devastating disease. Diabetes is the disease where your pancreas not producing insulin anymore to metabolize any sugar that comes into the body. But that can be a very long process until you get actually diabetes. You can have a pre-diabetic condition where your sugar will go up and the body will not be able to remove the sugar because of too much intake. It's overwhelms when it's too much sugar and carbohydrates, specifically processed carbohydrates, going in the body daily and day in and day out, and that's what the problem is.
And how do you treat a patient who comes to you with diabetes, or maybe they come with you with diabetes, high blood pressure?
Well, number one, we go over the diet. So the person needs to understand where is the sugar hidden, because people think that the sugar is only a white sugar, but in reality, it's the white bread and anything made out of flour. It can cause diabetes. So I go over the diet. I tell them what kind of food is good for you to eat, so they won't drive the sugar up. And I do the treatment at specific points for pancreatic point that I needle that helps to metabolize sugar.
So you believe that sugar really is the culprit in terms of them consuming foods that they shouldn't ordinarily eat, or they should change their diets?
Yes, definitely.
The sugar is the culprit. It was stated recently that sugar is almost the same to the brain receptors as cocaine, that people crave sugar.
Yes.
Eventually receptor transmitters actually become addicted, and then the craving is similar to drugs.
Right. Yeah. Anytime you eat sugar, it goes in the brain and it trickles down to every cells, and the signal is craving, uncontrollable craving of diabetes. So to break the vicious cycle, they need to change the diet, and they can take some nutritional supplements that will help to metabolize sugar and help them to break the habit.
Very interesting. And you also started to introduce recently cupping.
Cupping is a very good technique for somebody who has a pain due to a blood stagnation. Suction cups that you place on the body where the pain is, and it sucks the stagnant blood it moves the stagnant blood to the surface. So it's allowed to bring the fresh blood and the fresh lymphatic liquid to the area where the pain is and release the pain.
Okay, obviously we're on a radio show, so they can't see us. But explain to them what you're actually doing. What is the cupping? Is it a glass bulb or?
Can be a glass or a plastic bulb, and it has an attachment that you can pump the air out, and when you place it on the skin and you pump the air out, it creates the vacuum that so the skin gets sucked in. So it's called negative compression, where it releases the fascia underneath the skin and allow the fresh blood going to the area. Usually when you have pain, it's a blood stagnation. It's a stagnant blood that trapped in the area. So you need to move that blood stagnation and the pain get relieved.
And what experiences have some of your patients had with them? You just started to work with cupping. What was their response to it?
The cupping, actually, people like it a lot. They feel relief almost instantly.
Instantly.
Yep. And it does not, it's not painful. It's actually pleasant. Right.
And how do people become more educated about this alternative? Generally speaking, what would they do if they were interested in using acupuncture as an alternative?
Well, right now it's a lot of information on the internet, of course. There's a website you can find a local acupuncturist, the website called AcuFinder. Acupuncture, by the way, covered by insurance, so they can go on the website if they have insurance from their job. They can go on their website and the list of all the acupuncturists that participate with this particular insurance is all on the website, so you can get information that way.
I'm going to bring up one other topic here about comparing traditional medicines with new forms of alternative health and healing. Reiki, bioenergetic healing, obviously acupuncture, yoga has become more popular, they have hot yoga. How have these different forms of alternative healing, including yours, how have they improved people's health as opposed to them going to a doctor? The traditional way that we see going to a doctor gives you a general physical, they find what they find is an illness, and in most cases they prescribe a pill. A pharmaceutical pill that just treats the symptom but doesn't treat the cause. So how does acupuncture, along with these other modalities, but we'll specifically talk about acupuncture, focus on a difference between traditional medicine and alternative?
Well, I have many patients that came from a traditional approach and could not get helped with that and had more complication. I can give you an example of different patients and different problems that they came with and what they did with a doctor and what I did for them. And so, for example, I had a woman with elbow pain for 2 years. She was on cortisone shots and was on disability, couldn't keep the coffee cup in her hand. And when she came to me, literally in 1 month, she had a relief. And of course, we went over the diet and the lifestyle, and she never had a shot again.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really terrific.
And the same thing with headaches. People, women, a lot of women have headaches, and it helps a lot. They take drugs, and drugs has a side effect. And after one or two treatment, they had no headaches anymore. So it really works.
Magnificent. Again, I'm sure you might agree that you offer them the possibilities of what you're able to do to help them, but each person has to take responsibility for their own life and then implement those responsibilities, you know, like anything else in life, which is very, very important. Okay, that's great. So we were, you know, this kind of show that informs people about, since we've become so much health conscious, even though we've become a society where we are ailing, especially in the United States. They have one of the highest levels of illnesses in the world internationally. It's important to see that there are other modalities and other forms of alternatives that people can turn to. And, of course, acupuncture now has become much more mainstream than it ever was before. So we're very happy to have you on the show today and to let everyone know. If you'd like to, you could certainly give out your name, the place that your practice is at, and if you choose to give out a phone number, people could reach you, at least to contact you, maybe that you could direct them, or maybe you can help them, if you'd be willing to do that.
Yeah, sure. My name is Elena Rosenfeld. I practice in Westwood, New Jersey, and my phone number in the office is 201-741-9297.
Magnificent. We're so happy to have you on the show today. Again, Elena Rosenfeld is a certified acupuncturist. She's a massage therapist. She's a lifestyle consultant. And she'll be more than happy to help you out, to steer you, to set up a protocol so you can improve your health. And that's what life is all about, enjoying your health, enjoying your happiness, and enjoying life. Welcome back to the show. Jim Tassone is the managing director of Tassone Associates. Jim was a Pfizer business technology executive for 30 years. He's the graduate of Second City Training Center, the world's leading improvisation organization. Tassone is the creator of Improv Means Business program, which helps organizations enhance their communication capabilities using the principles of techniques of applied improvisation. His clients include major corporations such as Danon, DirecTV, MetLife, M&M Mars, Pepsi, Pfizer, and Time Warner. Tassone holds a BS and an MS degrees from Stephen Institute of Technology in Hoboken, New Jersey. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
Give the listeners an idea of what improvisation is. When I grew up, you know, as I said, we would improv in school sometimes, and we get ourselves in trouble, or we would get distracted from our academic pursuits, and the teacher would have to take us aside. But in this case, you found that improvisation from your background and your study actually increases productivity in the workplace.
Right.
Tell us how that works.
Well, the fact of the matter is that all of us improvise each and every day. We do it so naturally, we're not even aware of the fact that we're doing it. But there are principles and techniques associated with improv that if you become aware of them, you practice them, you internalize them, and you apply them, can make you better at improvising. And as much as we like to think we plan our days at work, the fact of the matter is much of what we do is on the spur of the moment.
So it's spontaneous.
It's spontaneous, but it's with a very acute awareness of what's going on around you. So not only the physical environment, but what the other people in the environment are doing. So some of the skills that we teach through the improvisation exercises are things like listening, awareness of body language and nonverbal cues, seeing things from the other person's point of view, making the team successful instead of focusing just on yourself, coming up with new and creative ideas for problems and opportunities instead of just doing things the way they were done in the past.
So in a way, you're saying that it really isn't spontaneous. Actually, we say it spontaneously, but actually we actually know what we're doing.
What we do in the moment is spontaneous, but what we've done is we've trained ourselves in the principles and techniques so that when a situation occurs, we're comfortable with how we react spontaneously. It's much in the same way that actors and other performers rehearse and practice so that when the performance comes, they can perform at their peak level. And that's what the improv exercises are all about. The more you do them, the more you feel comfortable in new situations or unplanned situations. Oftentimes people resist change. And what the improv exercises help you to do is to embrace change, recognize them as an opportunity to explore and come up with new ideas and opportunities. And in the 21st century, with the pace of particularly business accelerating, that ability to recognize when things have changed and adapt accordingly becomes more and more critical.
Now, you are a former Pfizer executive yourself, so you had a firsthand experience of how the corporation works and how different departments interact, which is a great experience to start with. What did you learn from those experiences? How bring our listeners through maybe an evolution of how you, what you experienced so that you could apply these skills today in your own company.
Sure. I actually took improv for my own personal development. A career coach suggested that I do it. I am by nature introverted. I like to figure out everything on my own. And in a corporate environment, particularly as you move up the management ranks, the ability to communicate well with others, to be more of a team player becomes more and more critical. So I took improvisation, as I said, as a recommendation from a career coach. I went through the Second City training centers.
Now this is the SLN training.
Many of the people who came out of Second City are Saturday Night Live alumni, ranging from John Belushi to Tina Fey.
Sure.
And also, most people know improv from Whose Line Is It Anyway, the TV show with Drew Carey. Mm. So I went through 48 weeks of improv training. People at work began to notice the difference in the way I communicated, collaborated, and came up with new ideas. When I told them what I was doing, they asked if I could do some improvisation workshops for other groups at Pfizer. So I did them for the marketing department, the talent development group, the information technology group. And other companies began hearing about the work and were interested in it. And so in 2008, using Pfizer Vacation Days, I began doing the work with some of the other companies that, you mentioned. And then when I left Pfizer in 2010, after 30 years of service, I began expanding this work full-time. And so I have customized workshops for organizations, improv for innovation, for collaboration, for communication. I have improv for customer engagement, for example, for people who are on the front.
Jim, what's a typical workshop in a corporate environment?
What I do is I customize each workshop to the development needs of the organization. So let's say they wanted to focus on enhancing their innovation skills. I would craft a workshop consisting of a sequence of exercises, improvisation exercises. There are hundreds of improv exercises from which I can select, modify, and tailor. The typical workshop might be a half a day. I would start with an introduction to applied improvisation and its value in the business. And then we'd go through a series of, let's say, 8 exercises and follow that with a summary of the improv principles and how to apply them in the workplace. For each of the exercises, what I would do is explain the exercise, divide the group up into 2s, 3s, 6s, depending on the exercise. Everybody gets to do each exercise and experience them. They're done in parallel, and I walk around and do some light side coaching just to make sure they're on track. Once everybody's done the exercise, we bring the group back together and we have a debrief. And the structure of the debrief is to ask them what they observed and experienced. We then discuss what's the learning or skill this exercise is designed to develop. And then we discuss how to apply it situationally in the workplace. And that will tend to vary from company to company, depend on the corporation, its goals, its challenges, and its culture.
Now, to make it even clearer, maybe you can bring us through a typical exercise that you might apply in this situation.
Sure. I'll give you an example of an exercise we do that's focused on collaboration or teamwork. I've done work with organizations where there's been a merger or an acquisition of one company, and they are trying to bring together 2 different cultures and make it into one cohesive organization, both internally and how they present themselves to the customers. So one improvisation exercise is called Dr. Know-It-All. In this exercise, we would divide the group up into groups of 3. And Dr. Know-It-All is essentially each of the 3 people represent a portion of Dr. Know-It-All's brain. Dr. Know-It-All will get asked a sequence of questions, and the people in the group have to answer the question by each person saying one word at a time, and they keep going around and around until they've given a complete answer to the question. And the learnings from this exercise are people have to listen, they have to anticipate what they're going to say, but they have to be flexible enough to change the word they were going to say because the person just before them might say a word they were not expecting. In addition, it changes the focus from you and you coming up with the best word to you figuring out how to give a word that the next person who has to say a word has a word that's very rich in possibilities. And it changes the focus of the person from making themselves successful and looking good to making the team successful and looking good.
So would you say that you're asking a question and then they are creating an answer in the group?
Yes. It also gets people comfortable with the fact that creation in organizations is co-developed. No one person has complete control over the process. And so instead of trying to impose your idea on the rest of the group through persuasion, what you are doing is ceding that idea of control and to the group itself and feel comfortable that you contribute and everyone else contributes equally.
Now, from your experience and observation, what are the immediate reactions that you see in these type of group? Is there something that evolves cohesively amongst them? Are they having fun? And then what are the results that we come up with once we apply these techniques?
What we tend to see is when they first do an exercise like this, their focus is on themselves. They're worried about, am I doing the exercise right or wrong? Am I doing it well or not? And by emphasizing with them, first of all, you don't have to be fast like a performing improv group. You don't have to be funny like a performing improv group. All we're asking you to do is to experience the exercise and reflect on what it feels like. Once we get people in that relaxed and comfortable state, they start to feel more comfortable with the other players and with the result that they're creating. What we find in terms of how they apply these things and the impact it has on organizations subsequent to the workshop is that people are more comfortable in group meetings, for example, where they're doing brainstorming, with initiating ideas, acknowledging other people's ideas, and having a willingness to explore other people's ideas, as opposed to trying to convince the group that they have the right idea.
So in a sense, in a way, you're also breaking down their blocks and their inhibitions and getting them to connect more, all of their circuitry to connect more, so they're working in harmony.
Absolutely. And one of the things I try to do in the exercises when I break the groups up, or I break the group up into smaller groups, is I ask them to work with people that they know the least and have worked with the least. And so one of the other unintended or not primary advantages that comes out of this is that people develop relationships in the workshop that they then carry forward into the work environment. And they connect in ways they would not have connected had it not been for attending the workshop.
Does the place in the corporation, meaning the environment, play a part? Where do you normally hold these within the corporate headquarters?
The ideal place is simply one that has chairs for the attendees and not much else. When you have tables, they're often barriers. When people are taking notes, those are often a distraction from being in the moment. So just like when you see improv performance groups and the only thing on stage are a few chairs and nothing else, that's actually the best environment to work in. So they're in their chairs for the debrief and the explanation of the exercise. They're up on their feet, and it's nice to have enough space so that the subgroups when they're doing the exercises are far enough away from each other so they're not distracting each other. But the minimal kind of physical environment, comfortable in terms of lighting and heating and the like, is really the ideal place in which to have such a session.
And what are the results that you've had as far as feedback from the different clients that you've worked from the corporate clients? What's the general consensus about how things have improved and how it's affected the productivity?
One of the biggest things is how much better people listen. We're always telling people to be better listeners. But a number of the improv exercises are associated with you truly listening and being present to the other person when they're speaking. So you're not constructing your response or the story you want to tell in your head while they're speaking, but rather you truly listen to what they have to say, acknowledge it when they're done, and then it's your opportunity to respond. And what happens in that case is people's trust relationships increase. When people feel like they're being heard and understood, they're more likely to feel a tighter and deeper connection with you. And a lot of what goes on in organizations, when you make proposals, for example, approval depends as much on whether or not the deciders trust you as much as they do the actual content of your proposal or presentation. Improv at its heart is ultimately about building and strengthening relationships with other people.
The passion that you have, your own interest in this, what is the experience that you have? How do you benefit personally by first implementing the program and then getting the feedback?
The reason I'm so passionate about improv is that it changed my life, both professionally and personally. It helped me to be more successful in my career at Pfizer, and it formed the foundation for my post-Pfizer career. So being able to share these techniques with others and have them get the same benefits that I got from them is very, very important to me. In addition to that, the skills we learn in improv, whether it's the listening or seeing the other person's perspective, can also help you in your personal relationships. So I think it's helped me to be a better family person and to be a better friend. And what could be more important than that?
That's great. Jim Tissone is the managing director of Tissone Associates. It's the flagship program, Improv Means Business. And we thank you for stopping by today. Giving our listeners an idea of what improv and the corporation is all about. And if you'd like, leave your contact information. If you'd like to tell our listeners where they could reach you or where a company could reach you, take advantage of your experiences and your services.
Sure. My website is improvmeansbusiness.com. So that's improvmeansbusiness.com. improvmeansbusiness.com.
And that's where they can reach you. That's great. Okay, so we'll see you in the improv question.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for stopping by. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you next time.